are listening to Geek World on KCLA-FM.com. We are your superhero, super hosts, Anime and Dave, bringing you the best in the world of geek. If you want to get in touch with us, send us an email to animeontheradio@yahoo.com. That's A-N-N-A-M-A-Y ontheradio@yahoo.com. Check out our website, geekworldradio.com, or check out our MySpace page, myspace.com/geekworld. Today we are here with the creative mind behind Afterlife, Stormcrow Hayes. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we have all sorts of questions to ask. See, we got our own questions out of the way beforehand, but why don't you start
That's
off
the problem
by...
with talking too much before the actual on-air interview.
Yeah,
we've
almost got the entire interview done already,
so we're just going to sit here and stare at each other for a half hour.
Dead air time for you guys.
Woo! And like, you know, look on the web, and you guys, just, you know, think amongst yourselves. Do you want to say first just where it's from, or do you want to give the good man the option to...
Why don't we just start off telling us a little bit about Afterlife?
Sure, no problem. Well, Afterlife, first of all, just to give the quick background, Afterlife, which is a graphic novel published by Tokyopop. Volume 1 is currently out and is available. I guess I'll just do the straight-up plug here. It's available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and, you know, you can order it through, like, Borders. Borders doesn't carry it on the shelf just because of a weird publishing deal, you know, just whatever. But it should be at most Barnes & Noble. And it's part of a 3-volume series, so it's not going to be one of these comics that just go on and on and on. It's a big ending when it ends, and it's a finite story. And the story of Afterlife is basically this is where everybody goes when you die, no matter, you know, what religious belief you ever had in your lifetime. You wake up to this very shocking, startling world that is different than any religion has claimed the afterlife will look like. So you wake up to this, you know, it's this sort of horrible place, and it's not hell, but it feels like it. And the story itself is the characters are on a quest to, as the big story begins, the afterlife itself is also decaying.
Right.
And so it raises the question, is there an afterlife to the afterlife? Yeah. And that's sort of what the characters are on a quest to determine, along with other things, as I'm sure we'll get into in the interview, what the personal stories are and whatnot. So,
yeah, well, Dave and I both just finished reading the first volume because, well, that's all that's out so far. but we couldn't put it down. So
awesome.
It's definitely definitely worth looking at and picking up because you'll want volume 2 immediately after, and then you'll have to wait.
it's really fantastic. I mean, you know, even if you weren't here, I'd say it's really fantastic. You know, like, very from the first chapter, it's just really captivating. You're in this place that you've never seen before, and it's just, like, a really cool, different, new look at the afterlife that's just, like, it's pretty exceptional. It's something that I've never seen before, and it's not always easy to find things in fiction, particularly, that are new and original, and so it's kudos to you for that.
Thank you. Rob Steen, who's the artist, he and I basically it's funny the way the story just came up is he and I had been working on some other projects over the previous few years, and we both found ourselves working at Tokyopop in very different capacities. He as an artist was doing like layout type work for their manga books that they're importing, and I was doing adaptations. So, you know, they would give me the interpretation, the direct, literal interpretation of books, and I would have to smooth them out and, you know, make them a little more readable for a Western audience.
Must have been fun going through those.
Yeah, I still do two series right now that I'm working on. And, in fact, you know, one of these times, if you'll have me back again, I should bring in, I started compiling a favorite quotes list of the original, you know, the original lines before I changed them. And there's some very, very funny stuff. So,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, so I was doing that, and I've actually done over 40 books for Tokyopop about this point. So,
oh, wow.
But at that time, I was probably done like 15, 20, and a number of different series. And Rob tells me, he says that he's working on this book that's an original book. Because up to that point, all I had known was that they were doing bringing the Japanese manga and some of the Korean manhwa, as it's called, over. And so I was like, they're doing original books? Why aren't we doing an original book? Because we had already pitched other stuff. I'm like, well, how come we aren't pitching a project? So Rob had wanted to do, we had this other project that he wanted to bring, but I didn't think it would be as good for for them to stretch out into a series. It was more of a finite story. So I basically decided to come up with a bunch of story ideas and pitch it to Rob, because Rob obviously spends, you know, the artist of any book spends the most time working on it. You know, I can sit down and write a chapter and it's going to take me a day, and it's going to take him a month, you know, to be there. So I came up with a bunch of ideas before, and we sat down over dinner one night and discussed what would be not only the best idea to work on, but also the best for Tokyopop, because it's obviously a very specific market and a sort of specific genre of, you know, manga books, which I know you guys are big fans of that arena. And it's funny because the other idea, like I thought the idea for Afterlife, which didn't have that title, of course, but was the one he would go for. And it really surprised me. He actually went for this whole other idea that I'm still sort of working on. I just don't have an artist for, and I need to develop, but it was called Pixie. And Pixie sort of fits more in the almost what a lot of people probably think of as manga, which is the sort of, you know, fairy tale-ish. But, you know, at the same time, anybody who knows me knows I have a dark sense of humor. So that was injected into there. And we sort of started working on it. But I think he quickly, I mean, this is just, no offense, Rob, I'm not putting words in your mouth. I think he just got tired of it, maybe. I don't know. We started working on it, and then it's sort of his creative energies just shifted, and he thought this was the better project, and I had no problem with that. So we went full bore on Afterlife. And we developed, I'm just talking like crazy here, but
go right on.
We developed, we put together basically the proposal, and we went to Tokyopop. And one of the coolest things is that later I found out that the then editor-in-chief had commented that it was, and again, this was back, so I don't know, maybe they've come up with great stuff since, but he thought it was one of the best proposals they had seen at Tokyopop. So it was very, very flattering to hear that kind of thing. And obviously we've gotten, you know, great, great accolades. I'm glad you guys loved it, because I didn't know what you guys thought until, you know, just the I got an email yesterday from Anime. But the book just arrived to you guys like 2 days ago, so I had no idea if you'd really like it or not. But IGN.com listed this as one of the top 10 manga books of 2006, which
was
amazing. Yeah, I was very proud of that, because, and also it was one of, you know, 8 of those 10 titles were original manga from Japan. So to be one of only 2 titles of what's known as original English language manga was very, very rewarding. And the reviewer, you know, just loved the book. And so we got that. And we also won an award recently, which is kind of funny. It's called the YALSA, which I never heard of before.
I haven't heard of that either.
And it's a library association. And as my editor put it, when we were nominated, before we actually won, he said, who knew you guys would be big amongst the library crowd?
Yeah.
And, you know, you've read the book. You're not what you'd think of as something you'd find commonly on library shelves, you know. It's but it's obviously, I mean, I think the key is for Afterlife is, when people read it, they really do like it.
Yeah.
It's just finding the audience. And the difficulty of a book like Afterlife is, and you guys know as manga readers, I think, I don't know what you, I should ask you guys. A lot of manga readers just want to read original manga.
Yeah.
And so what's interesting is, and I think, again, I'm just speculating. I don't know what Tokyopop's line is here, but I think that with their original line, they're having some problems because they're doing original books, which are great.
Right.
I've read several others that I really, really like. But I think they're having trouble finding a market for them, because a lot of the people who are reading manga love the authentic manga, which even Tokyopop publishes on the back of their book 100% authentic manga, you know, to you know, of their original manga series, to promote that aspect.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you got the people who read Western books, a lot of, you know, people who grew up reading, you know, Superman, Batman, whatever, who don't necessarily like the manga format a lot. You know, I mean, obviously there's exceptions to both arenas, but I think that's one of the problems that we're having in finding a larger audience than we have right now is just the acceptance between both communities.
I don't know, at least for your particular book, the way that it flows like a manga kind of flows with the story, so it's not as noticeable as, like, you know, comic book versus manga,
right?
You know,
having worked, I mean, I've read obviously manga way back, you know, in my youth, I was, you know, you couldn't find it as much as you can today, but I liked the manga books, and, you know, like Lone Wolf and Cub is my all time favorite, but But there was definitely that influence there. And so writing the book, it's interesting because I think it does. I tried to write it a little bit like a manga where it does have that flow, but also each chapter is a little bit, you know, like it's like an individual issue of a Western book. So I think it's actually a great blend of the two.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Yeah. It's interesting because at conventions, I'll occasionally meet somebody who, you know, when I'm at a booth and I'll be talking about it and somebody will just say, nah, I don't like manga. And they'll walk away. And I understand that point of view, but, you know, it's obviously, I think, more than that.
Do you like twisted humor, though?
Exactly.
You know, and I totally agree. But, you know, this book is certainly when you get a manga, it's not something that I think that you'd quite expect because it's got, like, these really great levels that are kind of different. You know, I think you see Tokyo Pop and people just, you know, think it'll be, you know, a bunch of guys in Neo-Tokyo, you know, blowing up, you know, people with, you know, like telekinesis or something.
Right.
But this book, you know, just it could have just as easily been, you know, like a Vertigo title or a Dark Horse title. I mean, it's really smart. It's got like a lot of, it's got kind of like obviously a real social historical type thing, but it's very philosophical and dark, and there's some great dark humor. And, you know, I haven't seen any of Rob's other work, but like he is like the perfect artist for this because he's great at the grotesque stuff. Uh-huh. But not only that, he, you know, one of the great things about this book, especially people like history, is there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people you might recognize, and even better, you know, certain people we were talking earlier that, that, you know, you might not recognize as easily. And the thing is, though, he's really good at drawing, you know, people who have existed, you know, like making characters look like human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a really good, you get a really good sense of a really great collaboration between the two of your talents.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I mean, you know, and again, Rob and I, by the time this came out, you know, we had been working together and dabbling on different ideas for like 5 years. So I think it's a result of that strength of, you know, and even my scripts, it's funny because I would send him a script of like I remember in chapter 5, I give him a lot of freedom to work on the pages. And so I don't describe a lot of stuff. And I remember at one point in chapter 5, he actually said, what do you want here? Because I gave him, it was like just too blank, you know?
Yeah.
And because, you know, for me, it's about the words and the story, the pacing is there, but I just wanted him to just go crazy and create whatever great images he could.
Right.
And, you know, unless there's something really, really specific, I mean, obviously I don't have, you know, if there's action, I describe the action, but a lot of it is sort of conversation as they're traveling and stuff. And so a lot of times I'll let him create the atmosphere, you know, visually, because that's what the artist does.
Yeah. So Dave had mentioned they're grotesque. Let's move on to the main characters in the book. One of the first characters we meet has a hole in his head.
Yes, he does.
And his partner is burnt to a crisp.
Right, Thaddeus.
So, Thaddeus and Mercutio.
Yeah.
So why don't you just talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, one of the things when you wake up in the afterlife is that you look exactly like you did at the moment of your death. So
I'm poisoning myself like next year.
Chainsaw, that's all I gotta say.
So yes, there is a lot of grisliness because, you know, and there's a character, a background character who lost his head in the French Revolution.
Right.
And he carries his head around. Because you still function, you just are torn apart as you were at the moment of your death. So yes, so Thaddeus was killed. Was shot in the head, and so he does walk around with a bullet hole at the front of his forehead and a big exit wound out the back. And we do get, in Volume 2, which is going to be out in April, what are we in, 2008? It'll be out in April 2008, which I know is a ways away.
Yeah.
We start to get into the backgrounds, the flashbacks to life. And so we will learn... by Volume 3, we'll learn what happens to everybody, our three main characters, but we will learn Thaddeus's backstory as to how he was killed. But yeah, so right now he's a bit of a grisly character walking around. Mercutio, as mentioned, burned to death.
Yeah.
And Mercutio's story is interesting, and he died shortly before his wedding. And in a tragic fire. And so his quest, whereas Thaddeus, his whole story is trying to find out, you know, like he's more of a philosopher, you know, trying to discuss why are we here? And as things are falling apart, is there something better that we can find? Mercutio doesn't care about that. He's the romantic, and he lost this love of his life, shortly before he was to be wed. And so he has spent, you know, although it is a timeless place, he has nevertheless spent hundreds of years searching for the woman he loves in an area of billions.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's billions of dead. And
if you can find Jesus, you can find Arabella.
very good. And the other thing is, he doesn't even know how, you know, as I said, you look like you did at the moment of your death. He doesn't know how she died, so he doesn't know what she'll look like. He doesn't know how old she was when she died. So she could be 80 years old. Would he even recognize her? She could have moved on with her life. Found somebody else. May have forgotten about Mercutio. He doesn't know, but he disregards all that. You know, he's a strong believer in love and finding the love of his life, and that's his quest in this crazy world of afterlife.
So we know that Thaddeus knows a little bit more about what happened to her. Are we going to find out in the second volume?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't want to have to wait till the third one.
Well, we don't find out the whole story of Arabella.
I can deal with part.
Yeah, but we do get a little bit more along the way. Yes, Thaddeus, it's alluded in Volume 1 that for our listeners that Thaddeus knows something about Mercutio and Arabella that he hasn't told Mercutio.
Right.
And so, yeah, so there's a little bit of a secret going on there. And you know, it's interesting because I think, and I didn't do this intentionally, but it's funny that Mercutio's story resonates with so many readers.
Yeah.
As the love story and as this, you know, sort of classic tragedy, you know, love story. That you don't act, Volume 3 is the final reveal.
Yeah.
So you do have to get to the end. But I think it's also, you know, it's just as we build to the climax of the story, you know, it will make sense. And Volume 3 actually is written, even though we're a far long way from it ever being being published, since the artist is only working on Volume 2 right now. But yeah, the story was so strong that even as I was writing Volume 2, I would write scenes and dialogue that I would, you know, as I was writing them, I'd be like, I don't think this happens to Volume 3. And I just started separating as I wrote, and it just was so obvious to me as I was writing and the momentum was there that I was writing both volumes at once. Huh. And even as I was finishing Volume 1, I was starting to write Volume 2 even before I finished it, you know, just because the characters speak to you and demand that you write down what they want to say.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break for commercials, but we'll be back with you in just a moment.
Hi, this is Stormcrow Hayes, and you're listening to Geek World.
We are back, and as you know, we've been speaking with Stormcrow Hayes about Afterlife. So let's get a little more into just a little bit about you and how you got into writing manga.
Okay.
And your background, just comic books, manga-wise, everything.
Yeah. Well, I started writing short stories when I was a wee lad, of a very young age. And so I've always been a writer. If you were to go back and just ask people that I grew up with what I was going to be when I grew up, it was a writer. It was a well-established fact. Even though, you know, like any journeyman, I did take breaks. And there were times when I thought I, you know, never wanted to write again. But consistently, you know, I think there's an old adage, which is if you're not sure if you're a writer, try not to write, and it's impossible.
Yeah.
And that's been certainly true for me. So I you know, when I went to college, I had no idea you could even major in creative writing.
Yeah.
And so I dabbled around in different things until I discovered that fact. Took creative writing, but I actually didn't find the courses offered at my college very rewarding. And I kind of branched out and just started doing everything. I started taking writing classes. Like, we had a film school, so I took screenwriting.
Right.
I took, you know, just everything. And long story short, I moved to California. I was originally from Cleveland, Ohio, and I took the big step 2,500 miles away and moved to Los Angeles, where we are broadcasting, about a little over a decade ago, which is hard for me to believe. And but I moved here, you know, obviously with the specific purpose of becoming a screenwriter, because that's what you move to LA for, at least most people in this, well, or, you know, to be an actor, or, you know, some, you know, a lot of people, you know, move here for the industry, and that's what I moved here for. And the interesting thing that I actually would like to talk about as far as comic, because I didn't move here obviously to write comic books,
right.
And that was way off my radar screen. In fact, when I moved here, I was very heavily into writing comedy. And so naturally, my first screenwriting gig was writing a B action adventure film. So there's so many weird twists and turns in my so-called career.
You got to tell us what the movie is.
It was actually never made. I mean, there's so many scripts are written, and you're hired to write things that just sit on shelves, and you know, at least I get a paycheck. But but I do have a produced film that's coming out in some ambiguous future. It's called The Deal, which stars Penelope Ann Miller.
Yeah,
sweet.
Henry Thomas, who was the kid in E.T.,
sure.
all grown up, and Dean Stockwell.
Oh.
So it's a nice cast. It was shot in Barcelona, Spain.
Mm.
I have no idea if it's any good or not because I haven't seen it. But and I've done work on like B movies, doing rewrites. I have an uncredited rewrite that I did on a script that, I mean, I've never seen the film, but I just know for a fact that it bears no resemblance to even my script. But it was a Steven Seagal film. But that gives you an idea of the type of work that I did to survive over the past few years.
Right. You do what you can.
B rewriting, yes. But what's interesting and where I sort of got into comic books. I mean, I read comics, obviously, growing up and everything. But where my interest sort of got reborn is I just got really tired. When you're writing screenplays, you're always, even if it's your original idea, you meet a producer and they say, this is great, rewrite it. And your vision often gets lost and
right.
There's nothing you can do. And the beautiful thing that I love about writing comic books is it's your vision.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rob and I came up with Afterlife and... there it is.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And I've got some other projects that I'm working on, and it's such a close collaborative. I mean, yes, you are working with an artist who has to, you know, create your vision and interpret your vision, but that's it, as opposed to working with actors, with working with producers, you know, directors. Everybody filters, and that's why I think there's so many bad movies made in Hollywood, is because, you know, the old too many cooks.
Yeah.
So...
okay, well, we are actually coming very close to running out of time.
All right.
So why don't we just have you...
Well, let me mention my website
exactly.
just so I can get the
exactly.
promotional
get
stuff.
All the promotion that you want to do right now.
my personal website is stormcrowhayes.com, and that's Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S. Hopefully you can spell Stormcrow.
And we'll have links to all this stuff on our blog, too.
Excellent. Thank you. The Afterlife, the book, we have a website for that. It's Enter the Afterlife, all one word, entertheafterlife.com. And all these, you know, if you find my website, it'll link to that, you know, or whatever. So they're all multi-linked. We have a MySpace page as well for both. I have an author page for myself, which is just, again, MySpace/StormcrowHayes. And I think it's Afterlife the Book is the MySpace page for Afterlife.
Yeah.
So those are the main ways you can find me on the web and through the internet.
And don't forget that you can find us on the web also, geekworldradio.com, myspace.com/geekworld, and send us an email to animeontheradio@yahoo.com.
Let me say one more thing. Definitely, guys, check this book out. It's dark, it's gritty, it's hilarious. There's laugh out loud moments. The art's awesome. It really is like quite a find, and I'm really glad we got in touch with you, and I'm really glad that you were able to come in today.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for coming in. We are taking you out today with a little bit of Frank Zappa with Imaginary Disease. So, sit back, relax, and you will enjoy this. You will. You know you will.